Hello, and welcome to episode number 177 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and blah, 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 blah. I'm Tim Dugan, but most importantly, I'd like to introduce someone very special, the Maverick of House Rey, first of his name, the X-Wing King of all 50 states, the Desperado from Colorado, the Tiger Shark of Estes Park, the Phil Collins of Fort Collins, the top 14 defeater from the Red Rock Amphitheater, the Hero Sublime running on Mountain Time, your 2019 X-Wing North American champion, Carson Rey.
Hey, Tim.
We have a jam-packed episode for you today, and it's a podcast so nice that we recorded it twice. We're going to talk about Carson's ascendancy to the throne, how he became your X-Wing King. We're also going to take a look at the metagame coming from Gen Con and looking forward to the upcoming Grand Championships leading up to the World Championship in just a few months. So lots to talk about today. Let's get right to it.
Yeah, well, I think you were a lot more modest in the first take there, Tim. I think... Giving us a second time to record this give you a little window to come up with a few more titles.
Yeah, I filled that out as far as I could, but I mean, you deserve it, man. You're the hero of the hour, the people's champion, right? How does it feel to be the North American champion, Carson?
You know, it's pretty good. it was quite an emotional ride there that weekend. You know, you get that round one loss, and your expectations kind of go out the window.
Well, I think that's like one of the reasons I think your run was so awesome. I know you're a little too humble to talk too much about yourself, but I'm not that humble, so I'm happy to be your hype man for the foreseeable future. But I do think, honestly, like, people don't understand, like, having to win basically 10 consecutive games of X-Wing, the majority of those being against really top level players, losing that first round basically sets you up where, all right, any loss means I'm completely out of this thing. So I can't imagine like the emotional and physical stress you were probably going under, you know, knowing that the whole time.
Right. I mean, yeah, so it's 11 games of X-Wing, and I don't think I really had any easy games. They were all really tough games. Most of them, I think, could have gone either way. And so, you know, to be on the winning side of 10 out of those 11, I'm just kind of surprised and pretty happy with how it turned out.
Well, and I guess we can dive into here some more of the specifics of your run here. I'm going to just constantly be praising you throughout this episode, though. So you don't have to be, you know, you can stick being humble, Carson. I will be your celebrator here.
I mean, you know, it's a trophy, but, you know, I don't really feel any different. I don't think I'm, you know, got better at X-Wing. It just, you know, things worked out that day.
I mean, it is a combination of factors, right, to, like, succeed at events like this. Like, nobody's under the delusion that people who are really good at X-Wing are guaranteed any victory at these major-level events. It's a mix of, you know, consistent skill throughout the day, plus, you know, some fortunate matchups and a few opportunities that could very easily swing against you, right?
Right. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't work hard. Like, I certainly worked hard and gave it my best, but so did, like, basically everyone else there. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, let's dive in a little bit into looking at Gen Con. I'll stop the praise for a moment to get some details out here. But we had about 200 players attending this event, and it was basically done over 3 days. So Friday and Saturday, they had qualifying flights. The Friday flight was the one you played in, Carson, had close to 120 people. And then the Saturday flight had just under 80 people, so a little thinner field that day. Both, though, required 7 rounds of Swiss to qualify for day 2 on Sunday.
Yeah, so you had to go either 6-1 or better on either that Friday or Saturday qualifier day to make it to the Sunday cut, which I actually didn't know you needed to do that going into the tournament. I kind of knew there was going to be 7 rounds, but I thought it was going to be a cut to the, like, top 32 of each day, or maybe top 32 overall. Just based off how their prize structure was, I thought that's how they were cutting it.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty interesting tournament format. The 7 rounds of Swiss was actually really brutal. Like, that's a really hard cut to make with such a narrow field, too. Because at the end of it, we only had about 8 players, I believe, from Friday make it to day 2, and then 6 more on Saturday for a total of a top 14 when Sunday, the cut day, came around. Yeah, it was an interesting format, too, though, because a lot of the prizes were faction-based. So we had a lot of players sticking around even after they were knocked out of the potential to make day 2. Stick around to keep playing to keep their record up so they could try and get, you know, at least top 4 in faction. Top one got some awesome template trays. So there's actually a pretty cool prize structure from organized play that, you know, made people more inclined to stick around.
Yeah, the prize structure was awesome. It was really cool to have all that faction specific prizes and just a bunch of prizes overall. Like, I think everyone really got a lot of cool stuff going to this event, and that's awesome.
I was talking a little bit to just hearing stuff from the OP team. Like, it seemed like seven rounds was a little bit much. I think they were actually expecting quite a few more players to be there. I think they sold substantially more tickets than people showed up, which, I mean, at a major convention like this, that's not unheard of. A lot of people planning to attend, they buy the ticket, and then either they make an event, you know, day two in a different event, or they end up getting distracted by something else at the convention. So, you know, having a decent number of no-shows was probably expected, but they expected more, so they had set that threshold. I think probably six rounds of Swiss would have made more sense for the player size. I mean, this is a big tournament, but even still, seven is a lot for even 120 players, so probably X and one records, like five and ones, would have made more sense in a six round format, but man, seven is absolutely brutal.
Yeah, it sure was. But I guess it's hard to complain now because it worked out okay.
Right. I mean, you got through all the stress and you emerged victorious at the end of it all. Before we dive into list details here, break all that down, I think you wanted to give some shout outs to people and some thank yous.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is, like, you know, yes, I won the tournament, but like, it takes a lot of people to get to that point. And so I just, you know, want to give some thank yous where they're needed. Of course, I've got to shout out Mile High Squadron and all my fellow Colorado players who, you know, just continue to give me excellent practice games, really challenging games that I think, you know, have forced me this year to become a better player. And, you know, just having that kind of competitive mindset when you're practicing, you know, really does help when you're at these big events. So thank you there. Of course, got to thank all the listeners. You know, you guys are my motivation. And everyone who sent me words of encouragement or congratulations. You win by yourself, you just get some cool stuff, but being able to celebrate with everyone else, that's the real prize.
Yeah, a huge thank you to all the words of support. Was really awesome, and just how excited everyone was on the TCX page. It was super cool. I really appreciated everyone at the convention who came up to say hi to us throughout it. I don't remember everyone's names off the top of my head, but it really means a lot, I think, to both me and Carson to just hear that people like the show we put out and the content we're pushing. Because, you know, we're just kind of nobody guys who started an X-Wing podcast, and the response from you guys has been incredible. So we really appreciate you guys listening to the show every week, and we're always happy to chat with you at a tournament.
Right. I mean, and, you know, doing the show's definitely been the motivation to, you know, make myself a better player. You know, figure out this game as best I can so that I can be an expert reporting back.
And I think at this point we can definitely say you are an expert.
I guess now, yeah.
Oh, he admits it finally. It's all gone to his head. We should probably shout out John McDermott too, who recorded a fantastic hour-long podcast with us yesterday, and all that audio is just unusable. So John, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll have John again on the show here soon. He's actually judging a tournament this weekend, so we were thinking we'll talk about our experiences as kind of amateur judges, learning all the little things you don't know when you don't get to judge X-Wing much.
Yeah, it's too bad we lost the audio file of John talking about his experience, because he did really well, too. You know, he got some early losses, but stuck with it and had a pretty strong finish at 5-2 in the second qualifier day.
Yeah, he landed a top four within his faction for that day too, so he had a pretty strong run there. Got those fancy dial covers. All right, Carson, so let's get to the meat of the conversation today. Let's talk about your list a little bit, because I think that's what people are curious to hear about, not only what you flew, but, you know, why those elements were important at this tournament run and how they played out for you over the day. So can you let us know what your list is?
Yeah, so I'll tell you a list and then kind of go back into the why. So I have Anakin Skywalker flying the Delta 7 with the 7B title with the R2 astromech. So he's 88 points there. Pretty expensive, but, you know, this Anakin is a workhorse ship, really powerful I-6 pilot. that can deal out some heavy damage when you need to. He can do some arc dodging when you need to, and he can regen and protect his points when you need that. I have Rick O'Lee with Predator and R2 Astromech. Just 48 points. This guy is just a nice little distraction who can pack a punch sometimes when you need it. And then really the standout ship is Obi-Wan Kenobi with the calibrated laser targeting configuration, R2A6, and Sense at 62 points. And then I had a 2-point bid.
Yeah, so the whole list came into 198 there. And let's kind of break down these elements individually here. Let's start with that Obi-Wan Kenobi build, because I really feel like that's the special tech in this list. I mean, both Anakin is a staple. He's expensive, but he's a good ace. Rick O'Lee has proven very quickly to be a very reliable source of damage output and reasonably hard to kill. But let's talk a little bit about this Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, we can. But before we get into that, I just want to say thanks, Tim, for providing me with an awesome list. I really didn't know what to fly. And I was just asking you, and you're like, oh, try this. And I was like, I don't know. R2A6 is kind of expensive, but you insisted that I just try it. And I was like, fine. And I put it on the table and there was no going back.
I was looking at the messages after the event and I thought it was pretty funny. Like, you were very down on R2A6. You're like, oh, it's repositioning, but it's really expensive and overcosted. But I'm glad you actually put it on the table too. And I guess I have to, by necessity, pass a little credit on to Kevin Lines, who we were practicing a few weeks ago, and he flew against me with an earlier iteration of this list before the R2A6. And he basically convinced me that Rick O'Lee is definitely worth the money and definitely worth putting regen on. And then later he threw out that he was running that R2A6 build. And once I tried it, it was pretty clearly a winner. So I'll give some credit to Kevin. He's a pretty good X-Wing player.
Yeah, I mean, him and I have been bouncing around list ideas this whole season. Maybe now he'll listen to some of my advice and maybe win a tournament.
Let's talk about Obi-Wan, though, the high ground Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, so I want to call this Obi-Wan high ground Obi-Wan, because he's got the high ground. There's nothing you can do about this Obi-Wan. He's got an advantage no matter what list you're bringing, you know, especially when you're playing against all those efficiency lists that have lower initiative and Obi-Wan gets to move last. Well, he's got, you know, a perfect read of the battlefield now, and he can use that R2A6 to just perfectly adjust his dial, leverage the double repositioning actions that the ether sprites have, and just really put him in whatever spot he needs to be. It's incredibly powerful. And on the flip side, you know, with that sense, well, if you're playing against, you know, initiative 5 ships that are moving after Obi-Wan because they only have a 2-point bid, or, you know, some other initiative 6 aces, you can use that sense. Obi-Wan's got a bunch of force, and he's pretty good at using his force efficiently with his pilot ability, so it's not that big of a deal to spend a force for that sense. And he's also just really good at getting up close, you know, doing some knife fighting, and so you're often at range 1 against those quick aces moving after you. And so, you know, getting to see their dial, then you get to change your dial a little bit with R2A6 and put Obi-Wan in the right spot for a block, or, you know, give Rick some information about where he needs to be. It just really makes the list work.
Yeah, I've been really loving this Obi-Wan build, and it works both with, you know, playing against lower initiative ships or match ships with the initiative bit or higher initiative. It's a really good combination. Like, calibrated laser targeting was a little iffy card. Since we saw the point drop, there's a lot of value to it. Because, you know, at range 1 on a non-7B Ether Sprite, like, if you have a focus token, calibrated is actually, I think, better than running 7B, because you have that guaranteed added result that you can modify. Whereas if you're just rolling in with the multiple attack dice, you might roll blanks. And R2A6 is fantastic. So it works really well in the Ether Sprite chassis, because, you know, you reveal, you like set a 2-bank, you reveal it, and then you can go down to a 1-bank or a 3-bank, up to a 3-bank, which is a huge, like, variance in the distance you go. And also lets you modify where your bullseye is going to be. So if you're using sense there and you're measuring where someone's already going to end up, you can then just adapt your maneuver to line that bullseye up so you can get the full effect from that calibrated laser targeting.
Right. Yeah, the R2A6 makes setting up that calibrated laser a lot easier. I will say this ship is not the easiest to fly. I think, you know, it's okay. You know, being able to change your dial, that makes things easier. But I think the potential there is just really strong. So I think the skill ceiling is just crazy high with this Obi-Wan. And I'm going to say, you know, even though I won the tournament, I could have flown this Obi-Wan a lot better. There was a lot of times where, you know, after I moved him, I was like, oh, I should have R2A6 to a different maneuver, and that would have hit the bullseye. So I think it does take some practice to really get that visual down of where the different banks and then like a bank boost is going to put you. So, but there's so much potential here with this Obi-Wan. It could really just do so much. And I usually fly him kind of in the middle of the squad so that he can either help out Rick when he needs to or help out Anakin when he needs to.
Well, Obi-Wan and Rick are really best friends here, kind of violating the Anakin-Obi-Wan relationship. But Rick is fantastic. When Rick reveals a maneuver that's faster than the ship that's shooting at him, he gets an extra defense dice. And if the maneuver is faster than the ship he's shooting at, he gets an extra attack dice. So if you set him up right, you're, you know, firing with a higher efficiency than you're actually paying for on the chassis. He's great with Predator, pretty good at lining up those bullseyes. Obviously, he gets the full throttle ability, so he gets free evades. That adds to his defense. But he really, you know, paired up with Obi-Wan, this guy's really hard to kill.
Right. You know, when you have that evade token from Rick, and then Rick takes the focus, and Obi-Wan's like, why don't you just have three or four focuses? That, sure, however many focuses you need, you can have them. That makes Rick just the worst target ever.
It really makes him unappealing to shoot at. And I've had instances where, you know, I was playing against some other players. I had a focus and evade on Rick, and they thought, well, I've got three really good shots. I'm probably going to push out a decent amount of damage on Rick. But I had Obi-Wan nearby. I spent all three of the force on Obi-Wan to maintain that focus. Rick took one damage off of three really good shots, and then was still able to fire back with some modifications. So when you catch your opponent like that, and then Rick can just bail out and regen with R2 Astromech, like, that's a really demoralizing turn for your opponent.
Right. It's kind of interesting. I think the weakness of this list is the Anakin. He's a really strong ship, but 88 points is a lot. And if he goes down quickly, you just have two attack dice ships that sometimes roll a bit more. So you can kind of get behind on the damage trace. So you really have to be pretty careful with your Anakin. And you kind of have to threaten a bit more with Rick and Obi-Wan to distract your opponent and then let Anakin come in and do the damage.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of different ace lists too, you might struggle with a little bit of, you know, burst damage where, you know, these ships, all of them aren't hitting that hard necessarily. It's a lot of hit and run tactics where you move in with one really aggressively, push out some damage, and then that one's got to bail out, maybe to get a better position or maybe to regen. Anakin is a solid ace. You know, he's really great late game because he's initiative 6. He has an ability that works really well with, you know, turnaround maneuvers, S loops, and K turns, so he can shed the stress by spending a force. He's really great for that. But yeah, 88 points is a lot to invest. And if he gets focus fired, you know, with the 7B configuration, he's only got 2 agility dice. So, you know, you'll get some decent modification from your force. But, you know, if they are rolling 3 hits multiple times, you can't do much about that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing this list does do well is all the ships kind of stay on the board for quite a while. You know, Anakin's got the regen, Rick's got the regen, Obi-Wan's got 3 agility and a bunch of focus tokens, plus the ability to just, like, never really be in a bad spot. So I do like that it has some resiliency there. That certainly makes things easier. I can make a mistake or two and take a few turns off and get those shields
right, and
back.
I think there's two factors. The reason I like this ace list more than what we see on the Empire side or on the Resistance side is I like having the force and a few more hit points between Anakin and Rick. Having both of them with regen's obviously a really powerful ability, even still in second edition. So even if they take a little damage, usually they can disengage pretty well, still get some defensive mods, and then be able to get their shields back and re-engage. You know, if you're flying an Empire ace list, typically those ships have very low hit points. So if you make a mistake, you're going to pay dearly for it. Soonterfell's only got 3 hit points. So if you let Soonterfell get bumped, that's pretty much lights out for Soonterfell. And then, you know, on the Resistance side, they're strong. They have, you know, high hit point platforms, but they don't have the force there to get multiple points of modification in a round. So, you know, Poe Dameron's great, but if he gets focused fired, he's only got maybe the one focus token to defend him.
Right. I was definitely considering the danger zone, the 3 resistance aces, but, you know, when I just compared this ship to ship, the Republic just seemed to be doing it a little bit better. It was actually kind of interesting with the faction prizes. I wasn't as into the Republic faction prizes compared to, you know, the resistance prizes or the scum prizes, but I think, you know, I wanted to bring a list that had a chance to win the event, and I think this was the best list.
So let's talk a little bit about strengths and weaknesses for this list, because no list is perfect, right? So what are the matchups you feel like that these three Republic aces really excel at?
Yeah, I mean, so you look at the 2-point bid and kind of the sense insurance policy. You know, I'm taking a lot of upgrades to help me with more of the efficiency play style, or, you know, the mid-range list where they have a pocket ace, but they're not really bidding. And so I think this list really excels against, you know, like 4-ship lists where they got some jousters and maybe an I-5 in there. That's kind of my ideal matchup. And I saw a lot of those.
And in a lot of cases, too, like that 2-point bid will be enough if they're adding a lot of efficiency, because they're going to be spending a lot of those points. So, you know, even if they have an ace in their list and then a couple, you know, efficiency lower initiative aces, you're pretty well positioned to take care of them because you can arc dodge pretty effectively. Even if their I-5, you know, has a stronger bid than you do, you still got sense on Obi-Wan, so he can move in, get his tokens, and block pretty effectively. So you have a pretty good way to deal with just a handful of aces with Obi-Wan.
Right. I mean, there was a few times I ran into some players with 2-point bids, and I got lucky on the coin flip. But, you know, I could have shaved a Predator down to a crack shot or something and outbid there. But I think, you know, when you play against lists, you know, where they have 6 or more ships, that can be a little difficult. And so just, you know, I need as much damage output as possible. And I think those are more important to have whatever edge you can in those matchups than when you're playing against other ships that might leverage a positional advantage. You have sense, so don't work too hard on that bid.
Right, you really end up depending on sense a lot. I think, you know, to counterbalance all the weaknesses of your list, like, that's really the card you depend on. So if you lose Obi-Wan prematurely, that's going to make the rest of your game really difficult.
Yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen. Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, a 4-hit-point ship with 3 agility, and sometimes you blank out and he goes away. But hopefully you don't put him in a position where that can happen.
One of the areas this list struggles, though, right, is when there's like 6 or more ships on the field. So like some classic swarm style play does present some problems.
Right. Yeah. And so there, you know, it's really tough on that. It's all about that approach. You know, if I can survive that initial approach, then these ships really start to excel. The Jedis are really good at those close quarters maneuvers, because even if they bump one ship, well, that's a ship not shooting at them, and they still get a bunch of mods with the Force. And Obi-Wan's really difficult to block because he can really either slow down and have repositioning actions or just, you know, 3-bank right past you. And, you know, Rick's advantage, you know, if a player really wants to get Rick, they can, but it's going to take a lot of effort. And usually then I'm not that far behind on points because he's kind of cheap. So hopefully they go for Rick, and then Obi-Wan and Anakin can come in and do some damage. But that initial approach is pretty difficult. Has to go really well.
So how do you handle lists that run aces at higher initiatives that run a stronger bid than you? Because it's actually not that difficult to drop below kind of your bidding threshold of 198, where you could go down to 196 maybe. But a lot of like Imperial aces lists run quite a bit lower than that, and they have a couple I6s. How's that matchup for you?
Right. I mean, so if they can whittle me down to a 1-ship V1 ship and they're moving last, then I think they can close that game out. But, you know, my ships have a lot of staying power, and a lot of those other ace lists just don't have the firepower to take down any of these ships. And if they're trying to, you know, focus one of my ships down, well, that means they're going to be kind of a bit more predictable, and I'll get some return shots. And I think that should work out just fine. And then, you know, once you get close, you get those sense triggers, and you can start setting up some blocks and trying to eliminate some of their ships. So even if you do get outbid, you do have a lot of play, and you have some turns to work on it, because your ships are going to be around for a little while.
Yeah, I guess you just really have to capitalize on sense on Obi-Wan early on before he gets destroyed, so you can get enough blocks in and start removing some pieces.
Right. I mean, and I don't know. I played a lot of jousters before I switched over to aces, so I've gotten pretty used to playing where my ships move first. You know, it's definitely a different game, but I think it's something you have to be comfortable doing, because taking a crazy bid, you're just conceding a bunch of your other matchups, I think.
Okay, Carson, so let's look at your journey to the throne, starting with kind of a rough round one for you, right? Your only loss the whole tournament.
Yeah, a great opponent, Adam Kempfers. He had a really cool 6-ship separatist build with General Grievous, and then two hyenas with prox mines and three vultures. You know, I mentioned those six or more ships. This could be a little difficult.
And those prox mines too, like dedicated ace counters, right? So like guaranteed damage on you. They get to move first so they can set them up. Potentially three damage, which is awful for you.
Yeah, I definitely took a hit and two crits on Obi-Wan from a prox mine in that game. That wasn't great. But, you know, the real thing was he managed to get half points on Anakin, and that really just gave him enough points to be ahead. And I just couldn't quite answer back in time.
Well, right, because half points on Anakin is 44, right? And his ships are so cheap, you have to kill a lot of them to make up that difference.
Right. The last turn, I was like, oh, man, I need to get like a hyena and like a vulture and a half or something. I got close. I think I was like 20 points away at the end of it. And that's fine. Not how I want to start, but I know I don't think I could have done much better in that situation. Yeah, and Adam flew it great. So.
Yeah, really strong opponent. I mean, that just sets you up for a really hard run, right? Because at that point, you're already one loss down. You're only allowed one loss if you're going to make day two. So you at least need to win six more games in a row to make day two. And if you're going to go all the way to the top, that's 10 games total to get to the number one rank. So you're already set up in a position where you're basically teetering on the edge of being knocked out of the tournament effectively and, you know, trying to make that day two cut.
Right. You know, I definitely was not even thinking that far ahead in the 10 games. I was like, oh, I still have six rounds left. Odds are I get another loss somewhere in there. Let's just kind of see how far we can go. I guess, you know, let this be a testament that, you know, don't ever give up. You know, even the odds don't look good. You know, do what you can. Put yourself in the positions you need to win the game. You know, you're probably going to need some dice luck at some point. And, you know, do what you can and then hope you get lucky when you need to. And sometimes it works out.
Well, and honestly, this is one of the points I think I'm most proud of you about, is that even after losing round one, you kept your cool, even knowing the pressure's really on you at that point, and you were able to make it through those other Swiss rounds. Because I feel like, I mean, after a round one loss, I could probably get a decent number of wins in, but I think I wouldn't be able to handle those high-stress games at that point, just knowing I'm teetering on the edge of losing. But you won your
right.
round
well,
two
at that
and three,
point,
and then...
like every game becomes a high stress round. It suddenly you turn the whole tournament into just a massive cut where any loss knocks you out.
Yeah, it became single elimination for you at that point.
Right. Yeah, and all those games were really close. And so each game was just an emotional roller coaster of, oh, no, I'm losing. Is this going to be it? Or, you know, even though I'm up now, like one blank out and it goes away. So it was a pretty draining day, not just the mental wear of playing seven rounds of X-Wing, but just emotionally draining of any round here could knock me out.
But maybe, you know, being right there on the cusp of losing is what gave you the fortitude to, you know, take it all the way, right?
Right. Well, I just tried not to think about it and just focus on the current game at hand.
Right. One game at a time,
which
is
all you can really do, right? Just control the game that you're playing right now. Worry about the next game later.
Well, and you had some tough matchups too. I know round four was probably your closest game in Swiss, right? It's about as close as you could get.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't come closer to a final salvo. Yeah, I was playing against Cam Murray, who had five alpha class Star Wings. So another kind of high ship count list. I ended up getting three of his. He had the cannon Star Wings. I ended up getting three of them. But then he erased my Anakin with kind of two rounds of being in the bad spot you don't want to be with auto blaster cannon. And he had marksmanship on there. So he rolled some natural crits and then got to change one to a crit. And so it didn't matter that my Anakin rolled two evades. It was one attack. There goes all of his shields. Next attack. There goes all of his hull. Cool. Glad I have all these force points I can't spend on defense.
Well, and those alpha classes kind of surprised me. I didn't expect to see them out in that iteration, but they're really strong. I mean, he had a mix of auto blasters, right, with some ion cannons.
Yeah, and they had intimidation on the ion ones, so when he got the blocks, everyone else got to really push some damage through.
Oh, that's so gross. I mean, yeah, and the ion cannon effects are really terrifying for you. Because any just like any hit that gets, you know, two hits through, you take that ion token, you're depending on your repositioning for your list. So if you have to move one straight, that cripples Rico Lee because he doesn't get the free evade from full throttle and just sets Anakin to be lit up by other ships. So, I mean, that's a pretty terrifying matchup to face against.
Right. Luckily, Obi-Wan was an all-star and just was able to adjust his dial and boost and barrel roll out of some pretty scary spots. But yeah, we ended up with exactly the same amount of points destroyed, 119 to 119 at the end of time. And, you know, my ships just have two attack dice, so it was a four dice versus four dice final salvo. We tied the first salvo.
Yep.
And then I got four natty hits on the second one.
And he got three natty hits that game. So, yeah. Three natty I think he finished his roll first, so like it was like, oh, Carson has to beat three natty hits, and then you rolled four. It was amazing. Yeah. But I mean, that just speaks how close the margins are, right? Like you're playing as best a game of X-Wing as you can, and it still comes down to a final salvo that could have completely knocked you out of the tournament.
Right. So that game I won by 0 points. I think one of them I won by 3 points. Like these were really close games. But yeah, and I just got to play a lot of great, tough opponents. My round six opponent, Damon Jones, was really good. And he had a tough squad. He's got Temin, Jess Pava, Lieutenant Bastion, and Finn in that resistance pod. And we'll talk about the Finn resistance pod a little bit later, but this thing was all over the place and doing really well. But this is just a, you know, a really strong archetype. But it is that kind of mid-range matchup where like I didn't even really fully appreciate just how strong my list is against it. I thought he was gonna really commit on Anakin, who I thought I got put in a bad position. And so I was going to bring Obi-Wan in to, you know, provide some cover fire. And instead he just turns all of his ships in on Obi-Wan. And this would have been an amazing play against really any other ace. You know, Obi-Wan would have ended up blocked and taking a bunch of range one shots with a bunch of mods. And I would have been down 62 points and wouldn't have been able to answer it. But I look at my two bank and realize I got R2A6. And I'm like, ooh, I think a one bank fits and doesn't get blocked. And then I have a barrel roll and boost and I get to dodge all of those arcs. Right. So R2A6, definitely better than a regen droid. It saves you all of your health.
Yeah. I mean like, yeah, we can't discount how important that is to your list. And I mean, those mid-range lists with Jess were fairly popular. Andy Myers, you know, we had him on the show before. He was running this at the Seattle System Open and had success with Jess and three Red Squadron experts. We were seeing a lot of that iteration, but also a lot of iterations similar to Damon's, where it was Jess and then some other, you know, middling initiative ships, but really good platforms. Bastion's a great T-70. The Finn pod was proving to be really good. So this is a pretty intimidating list to face, but I think you're teched pretty well against it. So you have some pretty good ways to deal with it.
Yeah, it was just like every game, just R2A6 just bailing me out. It was awesome.
All right, so I want to dive into your top cut matches here because these are some pretty intense games of X-Wing. But I think, you know, the appropriate thing to do would be to give a shout out, though, to everyone else who made that top 14 cut because they were all, you know, quality X-Wing players. We had really great list diversity in the top cut. All factions were represented. So I think, you know, the least we can do for them here is get their names read off here. So.
Yeah, I mean, and I think because we're hitting this episode even later than we planned now, I think, you know, we don't want to go into details about all the top 14 lists. I think everyone else has kind of covered that. But, you know, we do got to give them a shout out still at least.
Yeah, so, you know, in the top 14 there, we had Ryan Staniszewski, Mark Moriarty, Mark Grauberg, Ethan Van Sant, Richard Hines, and Sean Hune, all having a really strong run there, making the top 14. In the top 8, we had Mike Doyle, Samuel Rothstein, Andrew Knuckles, our friend over from the Birmingham Barons, and Todd Grubbs. And then closing out in top 4, we had Brad Stryzacek and Josh Benjamin, along with the finalist, your opponent in the final round, Matthew Carey, running an excellent list that kind of, I think, surprised a lot of people. And then, of course, obviously, Carson, you're our 2019 North American champion.
Yeah, shout out to all the top 14 players. I can say personally, you know, it was pretty brutal just to make it into this cut. You know, at Worlds, you can get 2 losses and still make a cut. So this was pretty tough.
So the format for the top cut here was a little interesting. We only had a top 14 set of players, but we played a top 16 bracket. So the top two seeds actually basically had a free win in their top 16 game, what would have been their top 16 game. So only the rest of the field there, the remaining 12 players, had to play a first round there in the cut. Your first opponent, Ethan Van Sant, he was eighth in Swiss, and he was running a pretty interesting resistance list, right?
Yeah, Ethan was a listener on the show. Really great to meet him and play against him. And I thought his list was awesome. So, you know, I've seen and played against, you know, some of these chewy resistance lists. It's a really cool build around thing where, you know, it's got a really powerful ability. And everyone kind of builds the list wrong, I think. But I think Ethan sort of figured it out. You know, cause Chewie's pilot ability where he gets a revenge shot and an action, when one of his friendly ships is destroyed within, you know, range three of him, that kind of leads people down the road of just taking a bunch of bad ships. They're going to be destroyed quickly, which like if you're list building and you're deciding, oh, it's going to be a good idea to take all these bad ships. Like something probably went wrong somewhere in the list building. But Ethan didn't fall into that common trap and just filled out the rest of his list with really good ships. So he's got that Chewie with no upgrades. And then he's got Jess Pava with BB Astromech, a Red Squadron expert with Heroic, and a Finn transport pod with...
Yeah, I mean, I think he actually made a wise decision here. I'm often overly critical of card abilities that rely on something going wrong, like things like Dead Man Switch, or before this, I'd probably say Chewie too. But I think, you know, there's actually interesting value here, because I'd say in a lot of games of X-Wing nowadays, you're going to end up losing a ship. That's almost a given here. So if your opponent really has to work for that kill, they're probably not going to kill Chewie first just because he's got a decent amount of hit points. They'll target one of the smaller ones. Well, if that's going to happen anyway, you might as well get some payoff from that, right? Like if they kill Finn, Finn's only 30 points. Chewie would love to get a target lock and take a shot at you.
Right. I mean, you might as well take some ships that your opponent actually wants to destroy, right? You don't want Jess getting double modded attacks at you all game. And yeah, T-70s are no slouch on offense. And of course, this Finn pod is just really good. You know, this is kind of the budget version with just Heroic, but even then, it's still got pretty good damage output.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the few cards I think that can really abuse Heroic in a meaningful way. You know, if you roll double blanks on two dice, which is going to happen from time to time, Finn being able to add another blank and then reroll all those, or if you already have a focus token, being able to reroll the blanks, then add a focus and take a strain. Like, there's a lot of value you can get here for just 15 points. I mean, like, that price point is coming pretty close to some, you know, mid-range TIE fighters.
Right, absolutely. And Ethan flew it pretty well. He kind of kept Chewie in the back and really forced me to deal with these T-70s and Finn. And so I kind of took a long time really trying to spread out his list so that I could get his ships outside of range of Chewie. But that certainly took a while. So congratulations, Ethan. Very good run. Awesome list.
But that was only the beginning of the challenge, right? So you get down to your top eight game, and this is against the number one seed who went undefeated on that day one flight, Mike Doyle. And he was running a scum list featuring what I guess I would probably say is the scum MVP. We were kind of discounting scum up to this point, but the Cartel Marauder in the Kiraz fighter has proved to be a really good value.
Yeah, these Cartel Marauders, I think, were kind of one of the breakout ships of this weekend. You know, we had the new rebounds, and so there was a lot of finding out, you know, what is going to be good now? What are going to be the new players? And I think, you know, we all kind of underrated scum, but that's because we kind of forgot that Cartel Marauders got a little bit cheaper. And are now just a really good value. You can throw in a bunch of really reasonably priced three dice attacks and fit some other scum shenanigans because they're just so affordable.
Yeah, so this list was rocking three of those Cartel Marauders, 38 points each, really cheap. It had a Torkoal Mux with the Moldy Crow title as well in the Hawk 290. And we'd seen a price bump in the Moldy Crow title, but it's still a really strong modification. And, you know, being able to have a forward firing arc plus a mobile firing arc to use Torkoal's ability and drop ships down to initiative zero, that's something you're pretty terrified, I think, Carson, of with your ace list.
Right. I mean, being initiative zero is not great, but also having Captain Seavor fire at you before you get to attack is really bad. Right. So he's got the 180 degree firing arc of Torkoal Mux with that crow title. And then he's got Captain Seavor, you know, just jamming whoever he brings down to initiative zero. And then he gets to follow it up with three Marauder attacks and just kind of delete some aces.
I mean, yeah, it's no surprise he brought this in. It's a really strong list, 199 points, so you get to beat him out on bid. Not that the bid's super relevant here, but it's no surprise that Mike was able to go undefeated that first day. He has a really strong list here, and I think he brought something that was innovative enough to really shock people so they don't quite know how to handle it.
Oh, this is like the brilliant, like elegant innovation where when everyone looks at it, they just go, oh, shoot, like why didn't I think of that? Just that Torkelmux, Captain Sivor combo, really cool, really clever, and it just works so well together. And you can just fill it out with three Cartel Marauders. It's a really solid list. Mike's an awesome guy. It's a really fun top eight game. You know, I think he definitely earned his top scum player template case. It was pretty funny, you know, before and after the game, he just offers a pull from his flask. Something you only really expect from a scum player.
A flask, I'm sure, was filled with grape juice, right? Or, you know.
Yeah, super, super wholesome. Yeah, Mike flew this list amazingly. I got to, you know. Yeah, and Mike flew this list amazingly. I rewatched that stream game. I'm not quite sure how I pulled it out because he just had my maneuver called on Rick like every turn. And just set up a series of really amazing blocks that kept Rick out of the game. And so Anakin and Obi-Wan had to do all the heavy work.
Yeah, I mean, huge kudos to Mike there. He did really well, got that top scum rank, was number one in Swiss on the first flight. I think he, you know, did a good job flying something that is really quintessentially a scum list. You know, you've got all the factors there, low initiative, efficiency, plus some really scummy abilities to throw out jams and decrease initiative. So really cool list on Mike's part.
Yeah, if you want to watch a great game of X-Wing, watch this top eight match on Gold Squadron's Twitch feed. Mike was really in the driver's seat for most of the game. He called my Rick moves and really forced me into some pretty suboptimal spots. Luckily, though, Anakin was worth a lot and got to stay alive and regen above half points. And those 88 points is worth more than two of these Cartel Marauders. So that's what held through at the end. But it was super close.
Now, it's really interesting that in your four top cut games that you got to fly against four different lists from four different factions. So you're really running the gamut there. Not much on the repeat front here. Your top four game against the 12th Swiss seed Brad Stryzicek. He was running a First Order list that had really no upgrade cards, just Lieutenant Tavsin in the Upsilon class shuttle, a Starkiller base pilot, the generic Upsilon class shuttle pilot, and then just Kylo Ren in the TIE silencer. So you've got basically two heavy support ships that can really put out some damage and then a force using ace.
Right. And Brad also has a 2-point bid. And so this was a really big coin flip on that initiative who gets to be player two. Because he really wants Kylo to at least be able to respond to Obi-Wan and Rick's movements. And luckily for me, I won that coin flip. So that meant I really got to be in control of the positioning game. And also, you know, lucky for me, I had a whole season of practice worrying about triple Upsilons. And so I got really good at playing against Upsilons, kind of knowing where they were going to land.
Yeah, and Brad's list is pretty difficult to approach. Those two Upsilon class shuttles have a good starting position where they can kind of just bump into each other to try and tempt you in. And then Kylo Ren's flying around for free, trying to bait you into moving into an unideal position. So you really have to like be really clever about your approach and move in pretty quickly before he has a good chance to respond.
Right. I mean, so his Upsilon's kind of just fortress bumping into each other on his board edge, which meant I sent Rick and Obi-Wan down the far side to his board edge. And so that gave me a lane to kind of cut in behind them. And Anakin kind of just kind of read the pace of the fortress and five-straighted past them when they decided to break the fortress. And so after that, then it does become a lot easier where Kylo's really the only ship that can put pressure on me, but my ships move after him.
Yeah, and I mean, having him with first player there is really important so that you've got all your repositioning, you can evade him pretty effectively. And once you get in behind those Upsilons, I mean, they're terrifying if you approach them from the front. But once you get behind them, they have a really hard time turning around and like really staying relevant in the fight. So I think you've made a good approach there, going around the long way. And, that ended up winning you the game, right?
Right. I mean, it's not like trivial to just get behind Upsilons, but I do have quite a bit of practice getting behind them. So I'm glad to see that practice paid off.
All right. So that brings us down to the final table. This was the defining moment that was going to determine who was the North American champion. You got paired up against a very tough opponent, the number two Swiss seed, Matthew Carey. He was running an Imperial list that I hadn't really seen anything much like this recently. So it was a little bit surprising.
No one's seen anything like this before.
He had the Grand Inquisitor in a TIE Advanced V1, also known as the TIE Advanced prototype. This ship had fire control systems. So he's getting rerolls when he has a target lock, but doesn't have to spend the target lock. Concussion missiles, which are a mid-ranged, middling cost missile that gives you 3 attack dice, lets you flip a damage card if you hit with it and they already have one. And then he was also relying on that sense upgrade card, which you had obviously been using a lot on Obi-Wan.
Right. I mean, his Inquisitor is pretty similar to my Obi-Wan. It's got some force, it's got the sense, and a lot of good repositioning.
Yeah, he also had Colonel Jendin in the Lambda class shuttle. This pilot's really great for a mid-range list like this, where he can use Jendin's ability to set up some early target locks at long range so that when he moves in with his other two Inquisitors, which had concussion missiles and fire control system, they already have target locks on the opponent, and they can just take focus and get ready to unload some pretty good heavily modified missiles.
Right. I mean, Colonel Jendin, definitely the workhorse making this list tick. Giving those early target locks and then later providing the coordinates. He can sense, see a dial, and then coordinate some repositioning with these Inquisitors and really set up their powerful attacks. Getting those early locks really puts pressure on the opponent. You really don't want to engage with these Inquisitors because they're going to be packing some punch, and you're really not going to be able to eliminate any of them really quickly because they have crazy strong defense.
Yeah, I mean, both the Inquisitors have a one force charge, and then the Grand Inquisitor has two force charges. And you really can't discount the ability to have both the non-purple evade action. So these guys can do an evade much more simply than the Jedi can, and then still have that focus modification from the force charges. Even though they're pretty low on hit points, if they have the evade token and at least one force, like, they're going to be pretty hard to kill.
Yeah, I don't know how anyone beats this list in 75 minutes. It's just way too hard to push damage through on any of those Inquisitors. Maybe you get half points on the shuttle or something.
Yeah, I mean, the final table being 2 hours, I think, was a huge factor there because you had that extra time, so you didn't have to be super aggressive and take a lot of risks, right?
Right. I'm really, really curious how this matchup would have gone in 75 minutes. I don't think I'd favor myself going into that matchup in 75 minutes. But luckily, I was able to take really non-aggressive maneuvers, kind of run away a bunch until I could really set up an engagement that I was happy with.
I mean, and this one was a real nail biter. I mean, all the way through, you started to, it wasn't really clear who was getting the advantage there. We were all just kind of watching, waiting for a ship to get blown up. Because, that first kill there was going to have a big swing for the outcome of the rest of the game. You guys traded some damage back and forth. He had some really rough luck, though, that one turn when one of his Inquisitors, who had already lost shields, basically had to fly over a rock, rolled a critical, but it landed cocked, so obviously you re-rolled it. Rolled it again, it came up a crit again, and he took a direct hit and just died there all of a sudden. That was pretty rough.
It certainly was. It's one of those you got to feel bad for him at that point. It's like, even though that really helps for you, it's like, oh, that's not how you want to go out.
Right.
I mean, in this matchup, he really got to leverage the advantage of that Inquisitor moving later with that 3-point bid against me. I thought I had a pretty good approach with Rick, but then his Grand Inquisitor turned in on Rick and really put a bunch of damage on him that kind of took him out of the fight for quite a while. But it wasn't until Obi-Wan kind of got to slip in close and get some sense triggers on the Inquisitor that I really got to set up anything meaningful. I mean, I think that's when I got to kind of start the turn and gain some advantage.
I mean, you guys were, trading senses back and forth too. So a bunch of the dials were flipping up.
It was pretty hilarious. We're both just setting these dials, knowing the opponent's going to see them. When you're both at range one of the sense ships,
it makes it a very different match.
It was pretty fun. Yeah. But I think with R2A6, I was able to leverage the advantage I got from sense a little bit more.
And, you know, shout out to Matthew Carey. He played a fantastic game, really gave you a run for your money.
Oh, he played it so well.
I mean, yeah, 75 minutes. That's all.
That was really tough.
We can play the what if game on 75 minutes. But at the end of the day, though, you took what opportunities you could. You played your best X-Wing that you could, and you emerged the 2019 North American champion.
Yeah, it's great. I got a big die now that's got all the different facings. So it can be Obi-Wan's calibrated laser die. Add that focus. The power move.
Or, you know, just if you're going to try and run that fin pod too, that's a great way to add that focus for the strain.
Yeah, I just don't want to re-roll it. Might get an evade on attack.
And you'll bust a ship too on the way. That thing's heavy.
No, shout out to all my opponents. They really great games. And like I said, it could have gone any way. I just feel incredibly lucky that, you know, whenever I needed it, luck was on my side. So.
Well, but let's not diminish your victory, though, here, Carson, because I do want to say that, you know, I am incredibly proud of you. Not only that you've given this podcast a lot of credentials, but also you've been practicing so hard. You've been so dedicated to this game for so long that I am genuinely really happy that you were able to take this event. And I think, you know, I speak on behalf of, you know, you kind of represent two worlds here. You started in the Twin Cities playing X-Wing, and we're all incredibly happy for you and proud of you. And I know the guys in Colorado are feeling the same way there, too, where you're now residing. So just, you know, a huge heartfelt congratulations from me, Carson. You did a fantastic job.
Thanks. Well, now my kingdom's all of North America. So I need to expand.
Well, yeah, and you have to get ready, too, because not only are you going to have to defend your title, you know, come next Gen Con, but we've got a world championship coming up here, and you need to protect America from all these, you know, international X-Wing players.
Yep, for sure. You know, one thing though, like that I'm pretty happy with is like, I've done well at Swiss before. And so like, it was really cool to, you know, survive that 7-round Swiss, but you know, where I've really fallen apart is in cuts, you know, like I make a cut, but then I get eliminated pretty quickly. And so one of my goals this season was just to, you know, not fall apart and play, you know, my normal game plan in the cut and not treat it as something differently. I think I usually overthink cut rounds.
Well, you definitely, even if you overthought them, it worked out here, right?
Well, you know, I think I took a different approach this time and it worked out well. Yeah, you know, I was already crazy happy just to be playing in the cut this past weekend. But then you look and you know what? That's only 4 games away from the North American Championship. So, you know, I can play 4 games. I've done that before. I just kind of took it one game at a time, you know, stuck to the normal game plan, didn't change anything up, didn't get over clever. And it worked out. So I'm happy with that.
All right. Now that we've gone through Carson's whole journey to becoming the North American King of X-Wing, it's probably Woo! A good time to talk. Yeah, it's probably a good time to do a little bit of a post-Gen Con meta, you know, wrap up here. This event was a huge event, really important. I think a lot of the trends we see at this event are going to kind of set the tone going forward into more grand championships in the next couple months, leading up to the world championships this October. So I think a great place to start that conversation is to look at our power rankings that we did a few weeks back and see how we're feeling about those now, if we kind of, you know, set the right bar here, if we made any mistakes.
Right. So in descending order, we had the Imperials, the Republic, the Resistance, the Rebels, First Order, Separatist Alliance, and Scum and Villainy.
Yeah, and I think overall we were pretty close, I think, in the ordering here. I think one of the biggest areas we failed would probably be in the, you know, the range we were putting, the gaps we had between these factions. Because, you know, in our minds, we were basically looking at the top 3, Imperial, Republic, Resistance, and then the bottom 4, Rebels, First Order, Separatists, Scum. But, you know, having seen this event now, seeing that each faction has some pretty viable contenders, I think the margins between these are for sure a lot smaller here.
Right. And you could say, oh, well, but because they had faction prizes, that's why there's more faction diversity. But if you look at like all these lists in the cut, you know, there's a list, at least one list from every faction. It's a pretty even split. All those lists are kind of about the same as far as power level. So I think, you know, maybe some factions have a bit more diversity, but each faction, you know, at least has one really solid list. And that's really cool to see that they're all kind of on a pretty similar playing field.
One, I think maybe one area, if we did have to swap, definitely swap some positions on this list, I think there's definitely an argument to swap Scum and Villainy, maybe up to the Rebel slot, because they had some really strong lists and some really good representation this weekend, and maybe slide the Rebels a bit further down.
Yeah, Rebels really didn't perform as well as I thought they would. I think they still have a lot of good tools, but I think, you know, people just haven't quite figured that out yet. But I think we definitely underestimated Scum's toolbox. They have a lot of really good options. And both the Scum list and the Cut were really cool and incredibly powerful.
Well, and I think now that we've seen some trends, right? So we've seen your Aces list do really well. We've seen Matt Carey's list do really well. This might be a position where, you know, the Imperials still have some strong options. They might be able to now create, you know, iterations of lists that can compete directly with yours, because they've got the most room for bids.
Right. And the Imperials definitely do have those Force users that can use Sense as well. So they can do a lot of the same things the Republic's doing, but they don't have the regen. So I will say, like, the Imperial list that, you know, showed up to the Cut, you know, we have three TIE Advanced prototypes in one list, and then we have a Decimator in another. You know, definitely not the Imperial ships I thought we'd see in the Cut. So that's definitely showing that the faction has even more tools than we thought. But I think, you know, I think maybe I'm a little biased here, but I think I'm going to put the Republic up at number one. I think they have the high ground here.
At least for the time being. And, you know, you put them there, if anything. you know, some other interesting stuff we saw in the Cut there. Not only did we have representation from all the factions, at least half the lists in the top Cut had either Force pilots or Force crew. I think really reiterating the value of just having a Force rating on the ship. You know, in a lot of ways, that's what made Matt Carey's Inquisitors so hard to kill. They're not a fantastic chassis, right? The TIE Advanced prototype is not amazing, but having that Force gave it such a recurring little bit of advantage that I think, you know, that's why it's more viable now than we probably would have expected.
Right. I mean, the Force is great. You know, it's just modification when you need it, and there's a lot of other good ways to use it, you know. Double repositioning with the ether sprites, or, you know, using it to see your opponent's dial with Sense. But, you know, it's also just, you get some mods when you get blocked, and so you're not just completely out of it. It's great. But I also like, you know, that Sense was also very popular, and that's allowing players to take a smaller bid and still be okay. I think that does help non-Force users. They can take a slightly larger bid than, so, you know, Resistance Aces, I think, now have a little bit of window to outbid the Republic or Empire.
Yeah, because they only have to, like, go down to 195, right, to be able to handle a lot of these lists that are depending on Sense and Force users.
Right, so that'll be really interesting to see where things shake up moving forward from there, from just from that perspective.
I think, you know, one of the biggest surprises for me, though, was some of the tech from the Resistance that was doing well. I expected people to be running Jess Pava with Red Squadron Experts, but it was interesting to see not only did Jess work with those ships, but she also worked with other combinations of efficient Resistance ships.
Right. It's cool to see just how quickly that archetype evolved.
I mean, iteration is a huge part of the game, right? So we see the general list doing well. And, you know, coming off an event like this, we're going to see people not only take the list that were performing well, but also start to iterate on them, shake up the upgrade cards, shake up the pilots so that they can better respond to the, you know, things that they're most worried about in Swiss.
Right. I mean, Resistance just kind of seems like mid-range of the faction. You know, you're going to have a lot of middle initiative ships that all have really good modification and some mobility. Where they all can kind of seem like aces against like a vulture swarm. We definitely saw the Finn transport pods just all over the place.
Oh yeah, Finn was definitely the Resistance MVP. This thing is really interesting. So it looks like a pretty unintimidating ship, 2 attack dice, 2 agility, 3 hull and a shield. But the builds we were seeing were really interesting. So Finn's ability, when he's attacking or defending, he can add a blank result to the roll, and then you could modify that result somehow, target lock or other abilities. But if he takes a strain token, he can then add a focus result. So if you have a way to modify that, specifically a focus token, you're going to get some guaranteed either defense or offense there. And it makes the ship surprisingly reliable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Finn transport pod, definitely the big breakout ship for the Resistance this weekend. I think Ryan Stanzewski his resistance list kind of really put all these ideas together. You know, he had three T-70s and Finn, and I think this is my favorite Finn pod that I saw. He's got Perceptive Copilot, Heroic, and then the real spice is Pattern Analyzer. So it's pretty expensive, 43 points for a Finn. You know, it seems pretty counterintuitive to put 14 points of upgrades on your 29-point ship to start with. But it really makes the ship shine.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, that's seems like a big investment into a ship like Finn, but this thing's really unappealing to shoot at because, you know, given the way his ability works is, if he wants to add a focus result while he's defending, he takes the strain then, and then after the attack resolves, that strain will go away. But since the strain is added after he's rolled his dice, he doesn't actually have to take the penalty of the strain. He'll just get the benefit of adding a focus result. I mean, obviously, if he chooses to attack and add a focus, he will suffer the penalty of the strain the next time he gets shot at. But if he has two focus tokens and can add a focus result to his defense, you know, opponents, that's really unappealing to shoot at. You could shoot at it, and if he rolls a couple paint, then suddenly he's got two or three evades, and your attack probably did nothing. Whereas if you just completely ignore him, he can then use it on offense and just deal out, you know, effectively three attack dice ships from a pretty cheap platform.
Yeah, really cool stuff going on there. You know, we don't really have time to go through all of the top 14 lists, but there's just a lot of really cool lists in here. I guess we have to give a shout out to Richard Hines making the cut with Separatists. He dealt John his second loss, and that's no easy feat, beating John with his four arcs. So good job there, Richard.
Yeah, and I mean, the Separatists was an interesting place to be, too, because there were really little representation from Separatists at the faction. I think just around 10 lists or less between the two qualifying days. So I know day two for sure only had three Separatist lists, but there, you know, those swarms are pretty effective, and I think a lot of people weren't prepared to handle them.
Yeah, so I highly encourage you to go look at all the lists in the cut. A lot of really cool lists.
Well, so that wraps up our look here at the Gen Con North American Championships. Huge congratulations again to Carson. I think everybody who's listening, if you're happy at all for Carson, please go onto the Radio TCX page and post some congratulations. I want to get it to the point where he's embarrassed because I'm so proud of him. And you can also,
we're well past that point, Tim.
And I'll try to post some of the fun memes I've been making about Carson just to embarrass him even further. Yep. There's some even better ideas in the future. It's not going to stop for a few weeks, so going to be a good time. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX Podcast. I know this was a little bit longer one, but I think this is justified given what has been happening the past week or so. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoyed the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening. And you can also just congratulate Carson on there too. That's another great platform for that.
Sure. If you want to support the show directly, you can please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today. Thank you so much to all of our patrons. It really means a lot to us.
And the plan is right now this episode will post, I think, on Friday. So tomorrow, August 10th, I'm planning on live streaming a hyperspace trial here in Minnesota. John McDermott, who's been on the show a couple times, will be judging that event. He kind of helped set it up too. So if everything goes to plan, there'll be a live stream on Saturday, pretty much all day there. So keep an eye on our Facebook page and on our Twitch page to see that live stream and watch some games. I'll be commentating along with Paul Olson. Should be a good time.
Awesome. I'll be there in the chat cracking jokes. You know, if you're looking for a list to play at a hyperspace event, that the High Ground Republic Aces, you know, that's hyperspace legal. It's not too bad of a list. It'll do okay.
Continuing the Radio TCX trend of running hyperspace lists at extended events. Well, no, nobody can criticize us for it. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, John, tell me what you had for lunch today.
I had a ham sandwich on white bread. Pretty boring, pretty basic. It's my go-to. Some strawberry banana yogurt, some goldfish, and a grapefruit bubbly. I've been hot on those bubblies lately. They're really good. Would recommend to a friend.